Hunters say that just sometimes an animal will step out of the bushes and stand there, waiting for the spear. Magrat managed to half-raise the axe, and then her hand slumped to her side. She looked down. The correct attitude of a human before an elf was one of shame. She had shouted so coarsely at something as beautiful as an elf. The Queen dismounted and walked over to her. "Don't touch her," said Granny. The Queen nodded.
"You can resist," she said, "but you see, it doesn't matter. We can take Lancre without a fight. There is nothing you can do about it. Look at the brave little army standing like sheep. Humans are so enthusiastic."
Granny looked at her boots.
"You can't rule while I'm alive," she said.
"There's no trickery here," said the Queen. "No silly women with bags of sweets."
"You noticed that, did you?" said Granny. "Githa meant well, I expect, daft old biddy. Mind if I sit down?"
"Of course you may," said the Queen. "You are an old woman now, after all."
She nodded to the elves. Granny subsided gratefully onto a rock, her hands still tied behind her.
"That's the thing about witchcraft," she said. "It doesn't exactly keep you young, but you do stay old for longer. Whereas you, of course, do not age," she added.
"Indeed, we do not."
"But I suspect you may be capable of being reduced."
The Queen's smile didn't vanish, but it did freeze, as smiles do when their owner is not certain about what has just been said and isn't sure what to say next.
"You meddled in a play," said Granny. "I believe you don't realise what you've done. Plays and books. You've got to keep an eye on the buggers. They'll turn on you. I mean to see that they do."
She nodded amicably at an elf covered in woad and badly tanned skins.
"Ain't that so, Fairy Peas Blossom?"
The Queen's brows knotted.
"But that is not his name," she said.
Granny Weatherwax gave the Queen a bright smile.
"We shall see," she said. "There's a lot more humans these days, and lots of them live in cities, and they don't know much about elves one way or another. And they've got iron in their heads. You're too late."
"No, humans always need us," said the Queen.
"They don't. Sometimes they want you. That's different. But all you can give them is gold that melts away in the morning."
"There are those who would say that gold for one night is enough."
"Nah.
Better than iron, you stupid old hag, you stupid child who has grown older and done nothing and been nothing."
"Nah, it's just soft and shiny, pretty to look at, and no damn use at all," said Granny,
her voice still quite calm and level.
"But this is a real world, madam. That's what I had to learn, and real people in it. You've got no right to 'em. People have got enough to cope with just being people. I don't need you swanking around with your shiny hair and shiny eyes and shiny gold going sideways through life. Always young, always singing, never learning."
"You didn't always think like this."
"And that was a long time ago. And, my lady, old I may be and hag I may be, but stupid I ain't. You're no kind of goddess. I ain't against gods and goddesses in their place. But they've got to be the ones we make ourselves. Then we can take them to bits for the parts when we don't need them anymore, see? And elves far away in fairyland, well, maybe that's something people need to get themselves through the iron times, but I ain't having elves here. You make us want what we can't have, and what you give us is worth nothing. And what you take is everything, and all there is left for us is the cold hillside and emptiness and the laughter of the elves."
She took a deep breath.
"So, bugger off."
"Make us, old woman."
"Well, I thought you'd say that."
"We don't want the world. Just this little kingdom will do, and we will take it whether it wants us or not."
"Over my dead body, madam."
"If that is a condition."
The Queen lashed out mentally like a cat. Granny Weatherwax winced and leaned backwards for a moment.
"Madam?"
"Yes," said the Queen.
"There aren't any rules, are there?"
"Rules? What are rules?" said the Queen.
"I thought so," said Granny. "Githa Og?"
Nanny managed to turn her head.
"Yes, Esme?"
"My box. You know, the one in the dresser. You'll know what to do." Granny Weatherwax smiled. The Queen swayed sideways as if she'd been slapped.
"You have learned," she said.
"Oh, yes. You know I never entered your circle. I could see where it led. So I had to learn all my life, the hard way. And the hard way's pretty hard, but not so hard as the easy way. I learned from the trolls and the dwarfs and from people, even from pebbles."
The Queen lowered her voice.
"You will not be killed," she whispered. "I promise you that. You'll be left alive to dribble and gibber and soil yourself and wander from door to door for scraps. And they'll say, 'There goes the mad old woman.'"
"They say that now," said Granny Weatherwax. "They think I can't hear."
"But inside," said the Queen, ignoring this, "inside I'll keep just a part of you which looks out through your eyes and knows what you've become." "And there will be none to help," said the Queen. She was closer now, her eyes pinpoints of hatred. "No charity for the mad old woman. You'll see what you have to eat to stay alive, and we'll be with you all the time inside your head, just to remind you. You could have been the Great One. There was so much you could have done, and inside you'll know it, and you'll plead all the dark night long for the silence of the elves."
The Queen wasn't expecting it. Granny Weatherwax's hand shot out, pieces of rope falling away from it, and slapped her across the face.
"You threaten me with that?" she said. "Me, who am becoming old?"
The elf woman's hand rose slowly to the livid mark across her cheek. The elves raised their bows, waiting for an order.
"Go back," said Granny. "You call yourself some kind of goddess, and you know nothing, madam, nothing. What don't die can't live. What don't live can't change. What don't change can't learn. The smallest creature that dies in the grass knows more than you. You're right, I'm older. You've lived longer than me, but I'm older than you, and better than you. And, madam, that ain't hard."
The Queen struck wildly. The rebounded force of the mental blow knocked Nanny Ogg to her knees. Granny Weatherwax blinked.
"A good one," she croaked, "but still I stand, and still I'll not kneel, and still I have strength."
An elf keeled over. This time the Queen swayed.
"Oh, and I have no time for this," she said, and snapped her fingers.
There was a pause. The Queen glanced around at her elves.
"They can't fire," said Granny, "and you wouldn't want that, would you? So simple an end." "You can't be holding them. You have not that much power." "Do you want to find out how much power I have, madam? Here on the grass of Lancre?"
She stepped forward. Power crackled in the air. The Queen had to step back.
"My own turf," said Granny.
She slapped the Queen again, almost gently.
"What's this?" said Granny Weatherwax. "Can't you resist me? Where's your power now, madam? Gather your power, madam." "You foolish old crone."
It was felt by every living creature for a mile around. Small things died. Birds spiralled out of the sky. Elves and humans alike dropped to the ground, clutching their heads. And in Granny Weatherwax's garden, the bees rose out of their hives. They emerged like steam, colliding with one another in their rush to get airborne. The deep gunship hum of the drones underpinned the frantic roars of the workers. But louder than the drones was the piccolo piping of the queens. The swarms spiralled up over the clearing, circled once and then broke and headed away. Others joined them, out of backyard skeps and hollow trees, blackening the sky. After a while, order became apparent in the great circling cloud. The drones flew on the wings, throbbing like bombers. The workers were a cone made up of 1,000 tiny bodies, and at its tip, 100 queens flew. The fields lay silent after the arrow-shaped swarm of swarms had gone. Flowers stood alone and uncourted. Nectar flowed undrunk. Blossoms were left to go fertilise themselves. The bees headed towards the dancers. Granny Weatherwax dropped to her knees, clutching at her head.
"No!"
"Oh, but yes," said the Queen.
Esme Weatherwax raised her hands. The fingers were curled tightly with effort and pain. Magrat found she could move her eyes. The rest of her felt weak and useless, even with chainmail and the breastplates. So this was it. She could feel the ghost of Queen Inchi laughing scornfully from 1,000 years ago. She'd not give up. Magrat was just another one of those dozens of simpering, stiff women who just hung around in long dresses, ensuring the royal succession. Bees poured down out of the sky. Granny Weatherwax turned her face towards Magrat. Magrat heard the voice clearly in her head. "You want to be queen?" And she was free. She felt the weariness drop away from her, and it also felt as though pure Queen Inchi poured out of the helmet. More bees rained down, covering the slumped figure of the old witch. The queen turned and her smile froze as Magrat straightened up, stepped forward, and with hardly a thought in her head, raised the battle axe and brought it around in one long sweep. The queen moved faster, her hand snaked out and gripped Magrat's wrist.
"Oh, yes," she said, grinning into Magrat's face. "Really? You think so?"
She twisted. The axe dropped from Magrat's fingers.
"And you wanted to be a witch?"
Bees were a brown fog, hiding the elves, too small to hit, impervious to glamour, but determined to kill. Magrat felt the bones scrape.
"The old witch is finished,"
said the queen, forcing Magrat down.
"I won't say she wasn't good, but she wasn't good enough. And you certainly aren't."
Slowly and inexorably, Magrat was forced downwards.
"Why don't you try some magic?" said the queen.
Magrat kicked. Her foot caught the queen on the knee and she heard a crack. As she staggered back, Magrat launched herself forward and caught her around the waist, bearing her to the ground. She was amazed at the lightness. Magrat was skinny enough, but the queen seemed to have no weight at all. "Why," she said, pulling herself up until the queen's face was level with hers, "you're nothing. It's all in the mind, isn't it? Without the glamour, you're..." An almost triangular face, a tiny mouth, the nose hardly existing at all, but eyes larger than human eyes, and now focused on Magrat in pinpoint terror.
"Iron,"
whispered the queen. Her hands gripped Magrat's arms. There was no strength there. An elf's strength lay in persuading others they were weak. Magrat could feel her desperately trying to enter her mind, but it wasn't working. The helmet was lying several feet away in the mud. She just had time to wish she hadn't noticed that, before the queen attacked again, exploding into her uncertainty like a nova. She was nothing. She was insignificant. She was so worthless and unimportant that even something completely worthless and exhaustively unimportant would consider her beneath contempt. In laying hands upon the queen, she truly deserved an eternity of pain. She had no control of her body. She did not deserve any. She did not deserve a thing. The disdain sleeted over her, tearing the planetary body of Magrat Garlic to pieces. She'd never be any good. She'd never be beautiful or intelligent or strong. She'd never be anything at all. Self-confidence? Confidence in what? The eyes of the queen were all she could see. All she wanted to do was lose herself in them. And the ablation of Magrat Garlic roared on, tearing at the strata of her soul, exposing the core. She bunched up a fist and hit the queen between the eyes. There was a moment of terminal perplexity before the queen screamed, and Magrat hit her again. Only one queen in a hive. Slash. Stab. They rolled over, landing in the mud. Magrat felt something sting her leg, but she ignored it. She took no notice of the noise around her, but she did find the battle axe under her hand as the two of them landed in a peat puddle. The elf scrabbled at her, but this time without strength, and Magrat managed to push herself to her knees and raise the axe, and then noticed the silence. It flowed over the queen's elves and Shornog's makeshift army as the glamour faded. There was a figure silhouetted against the setting moon, its scent carried on the dawn breeze. It smelled of lions' cages and leaf mould.
"He's back," said Nanny Og. She glanced sideways and saw Ridcully, his face glowing, raising his crossbow. "Put it down," she said. "Will you look at the horns on that thing? Put it down. But it'd go right through him. Look, you can see that tree through him. He's not really here. He can't get past the doorway, but he can send his thoughts. But I can smell him. If he was really here, he wouldn't still be standing up."
The elves parted as the king walked through. His hind legs hadn't been designed for bipedal walking. The knees were the wrong way round and the hooves were overlarge. It ignored them all and strutted slowly to the fallen queen. Magrat pulled herself to her feet and hefted the axe uncertainly. The queen uncoiled, leaping up and raising her hands. her mouth framing the first words of some curse. The king held out a hand and said something. Only Magrat heard it. Something about meeting by moonlight, she said later. And they awoke. The sun was well over the rim. People pulled themselves to their feet, staring at one another. There was not an elf in sight. Nanny Og was the first to speak. Witches can generally come to terms with what actually is, instead of insisting on what ought to be. She looked up at the moors. "The first thing we do," she said, "the first thing is put back the stones." "The second thing," corrected Magrat. They both looked down at the still body of Granny Weatherwax. A few stray bees were flying disconsolate circles in the grass near her head. Nanny Og winked at Magrat. "You did well there, girl. Didn't think you had it in you to survive an attack like that. Fairly had me whittling myself." "I've had practice," said Magrat darkly. Nanny Og raised her eyebrows but made no further comment. Instead, she nudged Granny with her boot. "Wake up, Esme," she said. "Well done. We won."
"Esme?"
Ridcully knelt down stiffly and picked up one of Granny's arms.
"It must have taken it all out of her, all that effort," burbled Nanny. "Freeing Magrat and everything."
Ridcully looked up.
"She's dead," he said.
He thrust both arms underneath the body and got unsteadily to his feet.
"Oh, she wouldn't do a thing like that," said Nanny,
but in the voice of someone whose mouth is running on automatic because the brain is shut down.
"She's not breathing, and there's no pulse," said the wizard.
"She's probably just resting."
"Yes."
Bees circled high in the blue sky. Ponder and the librarian helped drag the stones back into position, occasionally using the bursar as a lever. He was going through the rigid phase again. They were unusual stones, Ponder noticed, quite hard and with a look about them that suggested that once long ago they had been melted and cooled. Jason Og found him standing deep in thought by one of them. He was holding a nail on a piece of string, but instead of hanging from the string, the nail was almost at right angles and straining as if desperate to reach the stone. The string thrummed. Ponder watched it as though mesmerised. Jason hesitated. He seldom encountered wizards and wasn't at all sure how you were supposed to treat them. He heard the wizard say,
"It sucks. But why does it suck?"
Jason kept quiet. He heard Ponder say,
"Maybe there's iron and iron that loves iron. Or male iron and female iron. Or common iron and royal iron. Some iron contains something else. Some iron makes a weight in the world, and other iron rolls down the rubber sheet."
The bursar and the librarian joined him and watched the swinging nail.
"Damn,"
said Ponder, and let go of the nail. It hit the stone with a plink. He turned to the others with the agonized expression of a man who has the whole great whirring machinery of the universe to dismantle, and only a bent paperclip to do it with.
"What ho, Mr. Sunshine," said the bursar, who was feeling almost cheerful with the fresh air and lack of shouting.
"Rocks! Why am I messing around with lumps of stone? When did they ever tell anyone anything?"
said Ponder.
"You know, sir, sometimes I think there's a great ocean of truth out there, and I'm just sitting on the beach playing with stones."
He kicked the stone.
"But one day we'll find a way to sail that ocean," he sighed. "Come on, I suppose we'd better get down to the castle."
The librarian watched them join the procession of tired men who were staggering down the valley. Then he pulled at the nail a few times and watched it fly back onto the stone.
"Ooh!"
He looked up into the eyes of Jason Og. Much to Jason's surprise, the orangutan winked. Sometimes if you pay real close attention to the pebbles, you find out about the ocean. The clock ticked. In the chilly morning gloom of Granny Weatherwax's cottage, Nanny Og opened the box. Everyone in Lancre knew about Esme Weatherwax's mysterious box. It was variously rumoured to contain books of spells, a small private universe, cures for all ills, the deeds of lost lands and several tons of gold, which was pretty good going for something less than a foot across. Even Nanny Og had never been told about the contents apart from the will. She was a bit disappointed, but not at all surprised to find that it contained nothing more than a couple of large envelopes, a bundle of letters and a miscellaneous assortment of common items in the bottom. Nanny lifted out the paperwork. The first envelope was addressed to her, and bore the legend, "To Gither Og, Reedy This Nowy." The second envelope was a bit smaller and said, "The will of Esmeralda Weatherwax died Midsummer's Eve." And then there was a bundle of letters with a bit of string round them. They were very old. Bits of yellowing paper crackled off them as Magrat picked them up. "They're all letters to her," she said.
"Nothing odd about that," said Nanny. "Anyone can get letters."
"And there's all this stuff at the bottom," said Magrat. "It looks like pebbles." She held one up.
"This one's got one of those curly fossil things in it," she said. "And this one looks like that red rock the dancers were made of. It's got a darning needle stuck to it. How strange." "She always paid attention to small details, did Esme. Always tried to see inside to the real thing."
They were both silent for a moment, and the silence wound out around them and filled the kitchen, to be sliced into gentle pieces by the soft ticking of the clock.
"I never thought we'd be doing this," said Magrat after a while. "I never thought we'd be reading her will. I thought she'd keep on going forever."
"Well, there it is," said Nanny. "Tempus fugit."
"Nanny?"
"Yes, love."
"I don't understand. She was your friend, but you don't seem, well, upset."
"Well, I've buried a few husbands and one or two kiddies. You get the hang of it. Anyway, if she hasn't gone to a better place, she'll damn well be setting out to improve it."
"Nanny?"
"Yes, love."
"Did you know anything about the letter?"
"What letter?"
"The letter to Verence."
"Don't know anything about any letter to Verence. He must have got it weeks before we got back. She must have sent it even before we got to Aunt Morpork."
Nanny Og looked, as far as Magrat could tell, genuinely blank.
"Oh, hell," said Magrat. "I mean this letter."
She fished it out of her breastplate. "See?" Nanny Og read.
"Dear Sire, this is to inform you that Margrate Garlick will be returning to Lancre on or about Blind Pig Tuesday. She is a wet hen, but she is clean and has got good teeth. If you wishes to marry her, then start arranging matters without delay, because if you just proposes and similar, she will lead you a dance, because there is no one like Magrat for getting in the way of her own life. She does not know her own mind. You are king, and you can do what you like. You must present her with a fait accompli. P.S. I hear there is talk about making witches pay tax. No kings of Lancre has tried this for many a year. You could profit from their example. Yours in good health at the moment. A friend. Mus."
The ticking of the clock stitched the blanket of silence. Nanny Og turned to look at it.
"She arranged it all," said Magrat. "You know what Verence is like. I mean, she hardly disguised who she was, did she? And I got back, and it was all arranged."
"What would you have done if nothing had been arranged?" said Nanny.
Magrat looked momentarily taken aback.
"Well, I would... I mean, if he... Well, you'd be getting married today, would you?"
said Nanny, but in a distant voice, as if she was thinking about something else.
"Well, that depends on... You want to, don't you?" "Well, yes, of course, but..."
"Well, that's nice, then," said Nanny, in what Magrat thought of as her nursery voice.
"Yes, but she pushed me on one side and shut me up in the castle, and I got so wound up..." "You were so angry that you actually stood up to the Queen. You actually laid hands on her," said Nanny. "Well done. The old Magrat wouldn't have done that, would she? Esme could always see the real thing. Now, nip out of the back door and look at the log pile. There's a love."
"But I hated her, and now she's dead."
"Yes, dear. Now, go and tell Nanny about the log pile."
Magrat opened her mouth to frame the words, "I happen to be very nearly Queen," but decided not to. Instead, she graciously went outside and looked at the log pile.
"It's quite high," she said, coming back and blowing her nose. "Looks like it's just been stacked."
"And she wound up the clock yesterday," said Nanny. "And the tea caddy's half full. I just looked."
"Well?"
"She wasn't sure," said Nanny.
"Hmm."
She opened the envelope addressed to her. It was larger and flatter than the one holding the will, and contained a single piece of card. Nanny read it, and let it drop onto the table.
"Come on," she said. "We ain't got much time."
"What's the matter?"
"And bring the sugar bowl."
Nanny wrenched open the door and hurried towards her broomstick.
"Come on!"
Magrat picked up the card. The writing was familiar. She'd seen it several times before, when calling on Granny Weatherwax unexpectedly. It said,
"I ain't dead."
"Halt! Who goes there?"
"What you doing on guard with your arm in a sling, Sean?"
"Duty calls, mum."
"Well, let us in right now."
"Are you friend or foe, mum?"
"Sean, this is almost Queen Magrat here with me, right?"
"Yes, but you've got to..."
"Right now!"
"Oh, mum!"
Magrat tried to keep up with Nanny as she scurried through the castle.
"The wizard was right. She was dead, you know. I don't blame you for hoping, but I can tell when people are dead."
"No, you can't. I remember a few years ago you came running down to my house in tears, and it turned out she was just off borrowing. That's when she started using the sign. But she wasn't sure what was going to happen," said Nanny. "That's good enough for me."
"Nanny, you never know until you look," said Nanny Ogg, expounding her own uncertainty principle. Nanny kicked open the doors to the great hall.
"What's all this?"
Ridcully got up from his chair, looking embarrassed.
"Well, it didn't seem right to leave her all alone."
"Oh, dear! Oh, dear!" said Nanny, gazing at the solemn tableau. "Candles and lilies. I bet you pinched them yourself out the garden, and then you all shut her away indoors like this. Well, and no one even thought to leave a damn window open. Can't you hear them?"
"Hear what?"
Nanny looked around hurriedly and picked up a silver candlestick.
"No."
Magrat snatched it out of her hand. "This happens to be," winding her arm back, "very nearly," taking aim, "my castle." The candlestick flew up, turning end over end, and hit a big stained glass window right in the centre. Fresh sunlight extruded down to the table, visibly moving in the disc's slow magical field, and down it, like marbles down a chute, the bees cascaded. The swarm settled on the witch's head, giving the impression of a very dangerous wig.
"What did you—"
Ridcully began.
"She's going to swank about this for weeks," said Nanny. "No one's ever done it with bees. Their minds everywhere, see? Not just in one bee. In the whole swarm."
"What are you—"
Granny Weatherwax's fingers twitched. Her eyes flickered. Very slowly she sat up. She focused on Magrat and Nanny Ogg with some difficulty and said,
"I want a bunch of flowers, a pot of honey, and someone to sting."
"I brung the sugar bowl, Esme," said Nanny Ogg.
Granny eyed it hungrily, and then looked at the bees that were taking off from her head like planes from a stricken carrier.
"Pour a drop of water on it, then, and tip it out on the table for them."
She stared triumphantly at their faces as Nanny Ogg bustled off.
"I done it with bees. No one can do it with bees, and I done it. You ends up with your mind all flying in different directions. You gotta be good at it to do it with bees."
Nanny Ogg sloshed the bowl of makeshift syrup across the table. The swarm descended.
"You're alive?"
Ridcully managed.
"That's what a university education does for you," said Granny, trying to massage some life back into her arms. "You've only got to be sitting up and talking for 5 minutes and they can work out you're alive."
Nanny Ogg handed her a glass of water. It hovered in the air for a moment and then crashed to the floor because Granny had tried to grasp it with her fifth leg.
"Oh, sorry."
"I knew you wasn't certain," said Nanny.
"Certain? Of course I was certain. Never in any doubt whatsoever."
Magrat thought about the will. "You never had a moment's doubt?" Granny Weatherwax had the grace not to look her in the eye. Instead, she rubbed her hands together.
"What's been happening while I've been away?"
"Well," said Nanny, "Magrat stood up to the—"
"Oh, I knew she'd do that. Had the wedding, have you?"
"Wedding?"
The rest of them exchanged glances.
"Of course not," said Magrat.
"Brother Purdor of the 9 Day Wanderers was going to do it all, and he was knocked out cold by an elf. And anyway, people are all—"
"Don't let's have any excuses," said Granny briskly. "Anyway, a senior wizard can conduct a service at a pinch. Ain't that right?"
I think so," said Ridcully, who was falling behind a bit in world events.
"Right, a wizard's only a priest without a god and a damp handshake," said Granny.
"But
"'Half the guests have run away,' said Magrat.
"'Yeah, we'll round up some more,' said Granny.
"'Mrs. Scorbick will never get the wedding feast done in time.'
"'You'll have to tell her to,' said Granny.
"'The bridesmaids aren't here.
"'We'll make do.
"'I haven't got a dress.
Well, "'What's that you've got on?'
Magrat looked down at the stained chainmail, the mud-encrusted breastplate, and a few damp remnants of white silk that hung over them like a ragged tabard.
"'Looks good to me,' said Granny. "'Nanny'll do your hair.'
Magrat reached up instinctively, removed the winged helmet and patted her hair. Bits of twigs and fragments of heather had twisted themselves in it with comb-breaking complexity. It never looked good for 5 minutes together at the best of times. Now it was a bird's nest.
I think I'll leave it, she said.
Granny nodded approvingly.
That's the way of it, she said. It's not what you've got that matters. It's how you've got it. Well, we're just about ready then.
Nanny leaned towards her and whispered,
What? "'Oh, yes. Where's the groom?'
"'He's a bit muzzy. Not sure what happened,' said Magrat.
"'Perfectly normal,' said Nanny, "'after a stag night.'